My guest today is Dave White, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency Chief Information Officer. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Well, let's start with some basics at the beginning. National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, you guys have a very cool mission, very cool job. Give me the elevator speech of what the NGA mission is.
NGA mission is to provide situation awareness to our national policymakers and warfighters and first responders. Think of us as the nation eyes. We provide imagery intelligence, think pictures, and provide understanding of those pictures.
All right, very cool. Imagery and understanding, two important things. Let's talk about your role as CIO. How do you support that mission from a CIO's perspective?
Our primary mission is to ensure that NGA can provide the power of geospatial intelligence to our users and to make sure that that information, both from an imagery intelligence perspective as well as from a geospatial perspective, is available to our customers online and on demand.
And that means that you're worried about internal networks, but you're also worried about the data, and you're worried about basically connections to other pieces of the intelligence and DoD community as well.
Exactly. We're concerned about the data and managing the data and transporting the data. And since our imagery files as well as our geospatial files are rather large objects, we invest a lot in long-haul communications so that we can reliably move that data around the globe. We also are very concerned about storage. Given the large files of our data, we store a lot of content. And so, you know, think of us as perhaps having the largest storage set of data centers across the intelligence community.
Very nice. Now let's move over to your priorities. Maybe give us a little bit of a heads up from a broad perspective of moving data, protecting data, storing data. So what are you hoping to get done? What are your top priorities over the next 6 or 9 months?
The priorities near term are our desktop environment, which is part of our intelligence community IT enterprise, and really accelerating that program. The second priority is also one of the iSight services, and that's enterprise management, and putting a contract in place to deliver those services to the community. And the third priority would be accelerating the migration of GEOINT data to the cloud. And let me speak briefly about each of those three priorities. As I mentioned, DTE, or the desktop environment, is a common desktop that NGA, in partnership with the Defense Intelligence Agency, is delivering to all 17 agencies of the intelligence community. That program is a pretty extensive program that will deliver a common desktop to more than 200,000 users. So a pretty significant undertaking. Today, we are at about 11,000 deployments, and we are projecting being at 50,000 deployment by the end of our fiscal year 15. So accelerating the deployment of DTE is a priority. The other priority there is awarding a second contract for DTE, and we're currently going through the selection process, and I expect to award this contract in early calendar year 15 in the January-February timeframe. For enterprise management, NGA, also in partnership with DIA, is responsible for providing enterprise management services to all 17 of the IC agencies. And enterprise management in this case is Tier 0, Tier 1 help desk support, also making sure that we have an end-to-end view of the community's IT architecture from a situation awareness perspective. The third priority is migrating GEOINT to the cloud. We have experienced a lot of early success with migrating some of our core applications to the Amazon commercial cloud and also to the NSA Gov cloud. Over the next 6 months, we will accelerate the migration of our content. We already have applications there, as I mentioned earlier. The focus over the next 6 to 9 months will be to start migrating geospatial content. And this is important, as the third service that NGA is providing to the community is a service of common concern. The Director of National Intelligence has designated NGA to provide a common foundation layer. In the old days when I was in the Army, we would call these maps. But this is, think of Google Maps. We are providing that capability to the community, and the program that will deliver that is called NGA's Map of the World.
Now, I've heard about Map of the World when former Director Long spoke at an event a couple months back. It's a fascinating project. Talk a little bit more about what it is and how it will work. And then as you talk about moving to the cloud, you're looking at a commercial cloud that's government only, I can only imagine, and then a NSA cloud that's more of a secure cloud. How do you differentiate which data goes where?
Map of the World will serve as NGA's authoritative gateway to integrated spatial imagery and geospatial content. And that program will be hosted in Amazon's commercial cloud, and Map of the World will provide shared and trusted GEOINT related and multi-source content to both the IC and DoD communities. You also ask about how we are leveraging the government cloud that NSA provides, as well as the commercial cloud that is through CIA. Amazon is the commercial service provider. So let me speak to that briefly. We're using the NSA Gov cloud to store a catalog. Think of it as a metadata catalog of all of our content. And then we're also using the Gov Cloud big data analytic processing capability to do analytics on our data. We are working with Amazon to store our applications and to store our content. And then there is think of it as a gateway between both of those clouds so that it's transparent to the user. The user, you know, the beautiful thing about this is that the user will not even know that they're using the cloud.
I think that's fascinating, because one thing that you have to be aware of is not just interoperability, but accessibility, ease of use. If they have to switch one machine for the Amazon cloud and then switch to their secret or top secret machine to get to the NSA Gov cloud, that's going to create a level of frustration, and they're going to say, this is not worth it, or this is too much trouble, and you'll get a lot of complaints. Is that the thought process, is to take advantage of the technology to ensure the security but also the accessibility?
Exactly. It is the thought here is, number one, to remove unnecessary complexity out of our IT infrastructure. So with the Amazon cloud, we have sort of the foundation layers of the technology stack provided to us. And we don't have to go out and purchase that hardware, maintain that hardware. We can go and then host our applications on top of that open IT stack. That provides us with a number of benefits: scalability, elasticity, and also something that is very important to me, and that is being able to reduce the cost of our IT.
Do you have any estimates yet of how much of a cost you could reduce? I mean, you're talking double-digit percents, even more than that, you know, 50, 60%. Do you have an estimate yet?
I keep asking my team that same question. We're just too early in the movie to have any type of realistic estimates for its affordability.
But at the same time, I mean, just the history of cloud shows that moving to it, there is some cost avoidance, some cost savings. And even if it's not direct cost savings where you get to take a dollar out and put it back to the treasury, you at least have more money for other IT initiatives, some things that are more mission critical instead of the back office. I mean, in the end, that's really what you're hoping to do.
Exactly. For NGA, certainly we want to leverage the opportunity that the cloud provides for virtualization, mobility, scalability, and reduce costs. But we view the cloud as more than just a set of new technologies, but we really view it as more of a paradigm shift for how we architect and develop services. And key there, I stated services, not systems. Historically, we have built very tightly coupled systems, and the cloud gives us an opportunity to develop capabilities differently and really move to a service-oriented type of architecture and leverage the foundation of the technology stack that's already resident within the cloud. I would also make one other point. The cloud offers a very impressive and exciting strategic enabler for accelerating NGA's future state vision and for transforming our core mission. So we're not just taking current capability and moving it to the cloud. We are rehosting, refactoring, rebuilding, and really using the cloud to enable innovation for our core mission.
We have to take a break. My guest today is Dave White, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Dave White, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency's Chief Information Officer. I want to touch base on one other thing before we have to let you go. I have a great conversation coming up right after our discussion with Chris Rasmussen from your staff around open source and GitHub. From a CIO's perspective, Chris and I go into deep detail about what GitHub is, how you guys are using it, how's open source fit in. But I want the 50,000-foot view from the CIO's perspective. How does open source and specifically maybe the use of GitHub fit into your mission areas, how you're delivering services?
Currently, NGA use and we receive tremendous benefit from a considerable portfolio of open source software. And what GitHub provides to us is more of a forward-leaning public development presence that will foster and enable widespread usage and engagement. Think of it as sort of crowdsourcing for development of geospatial and imagery intelligence software. And as I'm sure Chris shared with you, GitHub is a public and a collaborative type of capability that has a very large following. And we want to leverage that for our foundational geospatial mission.
Was it tough for you as a CIO who's worried about security, who's worried about costs, who's worried about so many different things to get behind open source? Or was it easy for you but harder maybe for your bosses and people like that?
It was hard all the way around. And I really give Chris tremendous credit. He is a very effective change agent. And so we spent considerable time addressing the IT security and cybersecurity concerns. And so we worked with NSA. We also worked across other agencies of the IC. And with our GitHub deployment, we have appropriate security measures in place. Think of it as we have this capability outside of our normal IT infrastructure, protected behind appropriate next generation firewalls. By doing that, we're able to tap into the robust talent source that is available across the broader community. Even though we continue to make great strides in our hiring of multi-generational employees, the talent that's out there across the broader community in industry and in the government really provides a very impressive opportunity. So while there are some security concerns, I believe the way that we've deployed this architecture really address those security concerns, and it gives us the balance of benefiting from the GitHub capability versus the cyber risk.
Looking forward, there's a lot of focus on open source, use of open source software, open source, open standards. The White House even promised a new policy coming up by the end of 2015, so the government-wide perspective is being taken there. Do you have any advice from your perspective that you would maybe give to other CIOs who maybe are interested in using something like GitHub or another open source type of community crowdsourcing that you would offer to them from your experience so far?
The benefits far outweigh the risk. And I would tell you that what we've seen today is that the risk is very manageable, but what we're getting in return is really innovation. It's innovation, it's out-of-the-box thinking, and it's really advancing our mission. Yes, there are some cost savings associated with using open source, but the most impressive thing that I've noticed is the innovation.
I think that's great to hear from someone who sits where you sit in an intelligence agency, in a DOD agency, that is that confident and seeing that much benefits already. Well, so before I let you go, we're almost out of time. And before we jump over to hear from Chris about GitHub and the use of open source, I know a lot of vendors listen to my show. I know that, your budget, your IT budget may be very sensitive, but I know there's a lot of people who are interested in maybe supporting you at NGA. Just give me a sense, what should vendors know about working with your office?
We are very dependent upon our industry partners. In fact, more than 70% of our total budget is invested with our commercial partners through contracts, through grants, and also working with academia. So NGA is an organization that is comprised of approximately 50% government and 50% contractors. So you can get a sense of our tremendous partnership and dependency on our industry partners. In fact, our new director, Robert Cadillo, who took over leadership of the agency on October 3rd, decided that our partnership with industry is so important that one of the first releases was an open letter to our industry partners. And in that document, Robert talked about our dependency and partnership with industry, the 70% of our budget that is used for commercial purposes. But he also talked about how we need greater transparency, greater partnership, greater dialogue with industry so that we can innovate. That is one of the key emphases of Robert's focus here as the director, is to provide innovative analytic tools to our mission. So you also ask about the size of our budget. You can probably stipulate that it is a pretty significant budget. You know, not millions, but probably billions, but based upon the fact that 70% of our budget is actually used to procure products, services, capability from industry. As far as working with NGA, we have a world-class industry interaction program. And I would encourage members within industry to go out to our website, www.nga.mil, M-I-L, and at that website you can gain access to our industry interaction program.
All right, very good, sir. I'm going to say thank you very much. This was a very interesting and thoughtful conversation. I'm sure we could talk more, but instead we're going to switch gears and talk to Chris Rasmussen. Dave White is the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency Chief Information Officer. Dave, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Have a great day.
We have to take a short break. When we return from break, we'll sit down and talk with Chris Rasmussen, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency's public software development lead, about how they're using open source and GitHub. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We shift gears now to talk to Chris Rasmussen, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency's public software development lead.
Chris, it's been a while, but thank you for coming to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So we're going to talk specifically about GitHub, and we're going to get to what is GitHub. But this is, in many ways, something that NGA is doing that's different, that's out of the ordinary, and maybe could actually present itself as a model for other agencies. So let me start at the very beginning. What is GitHub?
Well, GitHub is an open source development platform. It's the largest one on the internet right now, where developers gather to develop source code together. And GitHub's secret sauce is kind of their collaborative layers that they have around the software, which it makes it easier to manage software projects and track them and see how things are doing. So it's a way to make changes and suggest changes to software, and then they're merged together and the developers discuss them. So it's a very collaborative process to develop better software together.
Now, how is this different than, for instance, what NGA or what your other experiences have in the intelligence world?
Well, yeah, there's always been version control systems, basically, to see how software is being, you know, who's editing what and how it's being managed. And there's been internal efforts for as long as software's been developed. There are some DISA hosts, some internal type of open source, government open source platforms. But the difference here is, as I call it, open source with a capital O as opposed to a little o. In some of these government systems, they just don't have the crowd like this does. I mean, GitHub has about 6 million users. So there's a difference that when you're going out to a platform of 6 million with a backed legally reviewed OSI license. And OSI is the open source initiative that keeps track of the open source definition and vets all of the open source licenses, rather than kind of sharing it point to point with buddies at work and having some of the practical effects of open source. But that's a big difference when you're stepping out into a platform, particularly as an intelligence agency, of a platform of 6 million and then developing software in that manner. So that was the kind of the difference. We were not the first to be involved in the open source community. The NSA has roots in this community, but they have donated one of their projects called Accumulo to the Apache Software Foundation, and the Apache Software Foundation manages it. What makes this different is NGA, we have an organizational account within GitHub. So we're not doing it through any go-betweens. We're going right out in an organizational manner, and people can go see all of the offerings that we have for ease of discovery, because there are some open source projects out there that the Department of Defense has had out there, but they've named them after the project, which is kind of esoteric, and that makes it harder to find. You have to know the name of the thing looking for it. With the NGA property on GitHub, you just go under the NGA property, which is NGA@GeoInt, if you go out to GitHub, or you can search NGA in GitHub, and that'll take you to it. Or you can go to our homepage, nga.mil, and there's a little octocat, which is the GitHub logo, and it links off to our software that we have offered. It's just for ease of discovery, so you don't have to know these little esoteric names. They're all listed there nicely in order.
So how are you guys using GitHub? How many projects do you have up there? What kinds of projects are up there right now?
Yeah, so it started with the first stuff to go out public was our domestic support software for our domestic support mission that we have. We work together with FEMA, DHS, and others when usually disasters happen and things like that, where our agency is asked to help. And so some of the software that was developed for those purposes, we put out there. And the first one that ever went out there is called GeoQ. And it's a way to take these huge geographic chunks. You have people that need to look at an area and see what's damaged, not damaged. It breaks it down into big squares, so you can know who's working on what. So it brings kind of transparency to who's doing what throughout the disaster management process. And that was the first thing to go out. It went out with quite a bit of fanfare because it was a first. And that helped a lot get eyeballs on it. And it's grown a very, very strong community around it. And this is the hardest part about the open source. It's not necessarily the coding part is incredibly difficult to get right, but making a community that sticks is hard. It takes some luck, sharing the right links, making the right context, coming on radio shows to get it out there. And that's the hard part, to grow some of these communities. And there's been a substantial community around GeoQ. So if you go take a look up there, there's been several hundred conversations and changes that have been suggested to it. So it's really, really worked. And from my perspective, if we got one contribution that we didn't quote-unquote have to pay for, it would have been worth it. In addition to the right thing to giving the software back when appropriate, because it's taxpayer-funded, if we would have got one, it would have worked. We've exceeded expectations by orders of magnitude with the level of community that's built around some of the offerings that we have out there. But that was the first one to go. In addition to that, there's these things called chef scripts. It's how to spin the software up really fast on virtual machines or Amazon Web Service instantiations. It's how to get it running really quick. And we've open sourced kind of little scripts to spin it up really fast. So there is that. There's a thing called Geo Events. It's kind of a companion. There's a request for information system that's kind of all three kind of work together in the disaster response. And then we've kind of branched out from that to a big data package, which modifies what I was previously talking about with NSA, Accumulo. It kind of puts a spatial index on top of Accumulo so people can do kind of a spatial search and spatial analytics on top of this big data database that's out there. That's out there. It's called GeoWave. So there's some cool screenshots of what it can do and what makes it different from a traditional relational database. And then also we have the source code for several apps that we have. We have a maritime mission to give warning to captains and mariners out there of piracy and kind of hostile activity. And it's an app that takes that information, and then if it's disconnected from a Wi-Fi or cellular network, it can display that information. So the source code for that is out there as well. We have some more planned. There's some conflation software that I'm going to put up there. This is really nerdy, but I'll try to be specific. What it does is, say if you're an OpenStreetMap or Google with all the little vector stuff, basically the lines on the streets, basically what it does is if you have differences, it kind of conflates them together, and it lets the user decide which is the best path. So it's a way to analyze huge, huge vector sets of street stuff, things like that. So that's going to be out there soon. So I think there's 9 things that are out there now.
Well, we love to get nerdy on this show because it is Ask the CIO. Okay. So my listeners will appreciate the conflation software vector sets that you've lost me on. Let me back up for a sec. So when we talk about software, are these, in most cases, in some cases, completed, like the beta version's completed, and now you're asking to go, okay, let's build on this beta, how to get better? Or are these pre-beta, are they alpha, or even pre-alpha, where we have an idea, and here's some code that we started, how can people add to it? So describe a little bit more about what you're actually putting out there, because one person would say, well, why are you putting software that's done out there? And obviously, I think the answer is easy to make it better, but give me your perspective.
Sure. Well, software is never done. It's just constantly being tweaked, changed, features added. So I don't think there's an end state in this kind of development environment in the world that we live in now of completed software. And that's the advantage of open source is you have the source code. You can continuously update it and keep prototyping and making features on the fly if you have the in-house talent or the crowdsource it out like we're trying to do to make better software. But as far as getting stuff out there, we have this board, the GitHub governance board, and we take a look at what's being offered, and it kind of has to pass the cool functionality factor. What we don't want is our property be up there and just have a bunch of dumpy scripts. It has to pass, it has to be pretty decent, and we think that there's going to be decent value up there. So I would say it's alpha, but we're not going to really put up anything that's really, really buggy or of low value. It kind of has to be of some value, not be crude, to make a cut to get out there, because we just don't want to dump a bunch of kind of scripts that have marginal value. So I would say the alpha stage, that's when we would take a look at something. If it passes the cool factor, we'd put it out there.
And then what happens is once you put it out there, people then can look at it and go, well, I think I can add to this or improve upon it. Or do you put out there, for instance, I'll use a statement of wishes, meaning, hey, here's our software that does X. We'd really love to add Y, Z, and A to it. I mean, is that how it works?
It depends on how the lead developers manage the project. They can put a list of tasks, and GitHub helps you manage this stuff. So, you know, you can put jobs out there. Job 1, 2, 3, 4, and it tracks when they're completed, and it has little, you know, color-coded things to know when things are in work, and there's a certain way to tag things, like this is a bug fix, this is a configuration fix, and that's what GitHub's really good at. But there usually is a task that the lead developers would like to see it go, and they can lead that by putting out what jobs need to be done. That's incredibly important, but getting those links out. So a lot of times when we have software that's ready, we'll coordinate with our public affairs people and say, hey, put this out on our corporate Facebook page, you know, tweet these links, put it into LinkedIn, put it into Google+, and then, you know, a lot of our folks will individually do that on their own social media accounts and to spread the link, because that's the thing. And from that conference you and I attended a little bit ago, I mean, that was somebody from MIT Lincoln Labs came out and said, hey, we want to take a look at GeoWave. I mean, making those connections and growing that community to spread the link and the idea as far as possible to catch the biggest pool of talent and spare cycles that you can grab, that's the difficult part. So really getting it to spread is hard, because sometimes you have some great software and it's just up there and then it's this snooze fest. I mean, I think I use this at the thing, is it's kind of like the restaurant business. A lot of folks that open restaurants have really good food, and a lot of them bomb. I mean, there's a series of factors as far as friends telling friends, reviews on Yelp. It's kind of just this really hard to manage area where there's so much ambiguity. But just pounding the pavement, working the social media aspect, getting it out there, doing things like this to share those type of links and make those connections.
All right, good analogy on the restaurant, because I think there's some kind of percentage of 80% of all restaurants fail or something.
Oh, absolutely. It's just as high with knowledge management projects.
Right.
It's almost the same. When I was looking at that, and you hear, you know, it's, you know, 90% of restaurants fail within the first year.
Right.
When you look at knowledge management projects, internal to agencies, enterprise 2.0 projects, collaboration projects, almost the same failure rate. It's really high.
It's like the same thing with blogs. You want to, I'm going to write a blog, and then realize that you got to do it every single day or every week, or all of a sudden becomes, I don't have the time, or you lose the momentum. I think it's the same concern on your end.
Absolutely. We want to keep up a consistent release schedule. Like I was saying, with the conflation software that's going to come online, we're going to have another source code for an app. It's a disconnected viewer for our disaster response people. If the communications are down, they still need kind of some drive-by-drive functionality. So this app, what it does is you can just pump a ton of HTML, CSS, and JavaScript into a tablet and have it work and kind of have navigationally like functionality when it's completely disconnected from a network. So we're going to have that out there pretty soon as well. But we got to keep up a consistent launch schedule, and it just can't be a novelty act. You know, you get some first mover advantages because it was cool. We were the first agency to do this, but we need to keep pressing, because if we ease up, you're going to lose the community.
We have to take a break. My guest today is Chris Rasmussen, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency's Public Software Development Lead. I'm your host, Jason Miller. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Chris Rasmussen, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency's Public Software Development Lead.
Now, Chris, before break, we're talking a lot about how you're using GitHub and how it works and some of the things you guys are doing with it. Let's take that back a step and talk about the mission of NGA. What made you guys decide to go with GitHub from a mission perspective versus keeping it in-house using some of the tools that maybe DISA offers or other tools you've used in the past?
Well, I mean, you can't crowdsource something without a crowd. I'm a big fan of going to the places where there's already huge network effects. And when you have 6 million users, that's where the most eyeballs are going to be. So from a security perspective, actually, the more eyeballs that you have on the code, the more secure it can become. And that's one of the advantages of open source, is this, that famous quote, with more eyes, all bugs are shallow. And that's the idea behind it. So people's default thing to go to these, you know, small communities, those are appropriate, and those are never going to go away. But sometimes you need to go out and go into these huge platforms to try to catch that the largest pool of talent. So internal software management systems are never going to go away. It's not an either-or proposition. But for this case, we needed to pick who is the market leader at this time, and GitHub is the market leader at this time.
One thing you talk about is getting more eyeballs. Obviously, you guys have some kind of governance board around GitHub that says this is appropriate for GitHub open source. This is something we got to keep internal. Mm-hmm. Discuss a little bit how that works.
Yeah, the checkout process. So there's a security checkout review. They take a look at the code. We sit down with the developers. Our security personnel sit down, and they look over it. What does it do? What is your audience? They take a look at it, and then a judgment is made whether it's appropriate for public release. And then there is obviously forms that are generated for legal reasons that are generated. And if it is deemed to go to the public, then it does. We have a pretty good process that's worked out. So if people would like the opportunity or would like to put some source code out into the GitHub repository, there is a checkout process that we've worked out with our security personnel. And that's how we check out some of the code. So there's reviews that are done and legal sign-offs that need to happen for it to get out to the public.
How difficult was that first one to get out to GitHub versus the second, third, and fourth one?
Yeah, like anything. There is no rearview mirror here. There is that kind of precedent with NSA, with the Apache software donation. But you know what's exciting and frustrating at the same time when there's no rearview mirror is a lot of people want to go, where's the playbook for this? There isn't one. So you're looking for points of contact. You're looking for forms that are 80% in the ballpark and kind of crafting the other part or completely inventing things completely anew. So the first one was like any first. It's a little rockier. Then it's starting to smooth out as it gets a little more institutionalized. But we're still in very early phases of this. And there are certain forms that are still under review to streamline this even further. But the fact that we kind of have it worked out in the ballpark, like I said, this work is never done. But yeah, the first was, okay, how do we find this POC? And I think this process gets it 80%. Can we call it this rather than that gets it close enough? But we do have a pretty rigorous checkout process to get things out there.
Without getting into specifics, because I know there could be some sensitivities, has there been a time where somebody wanted to put something on GitHub and the security folks or the legal folks said, absolutely not, no way, and then there's that kind of push and pull where you have to try to find a compromise? Have you had that experience yet?
No, not yet. I mean, because the kind of stuff that is bound for GitHub kind of makes perfect sense of it should be out there, whether it be our disaster relief source code or in particularly if you want to be a part of the big data ecosystem, you just have to be in the open. If you take a look at the big data ecosystem, so much of it is Apache Software Foundation. So many of these things have Apache 2.0 licenses that are out into GitHub and other open systems. So to be a part of that community, you have to be out in the open. It's been very, very logical. We haven't got to any where it didn't make a lot of sense yet. So most of them have been, yeah, this makes perfect sense of why it needs to go there. So we haven't got there.
You mentioned just briefly security personnel. When you're describing earlier on in the program, when you're describing all the different softwares that are being put out there at GitHub that you're asking the 6 million people to take part in and to help with, one question that comes to my mind is the security piece. Because mm-hmm. What happens when you bring it back in, or what happens when you leave it out there for other people to use? How do you ensure that it's safe, it's secure, that people aren't putting in back doors or there's no, either a malicious activity or by accident malicious activity or someone thinks their code's secure, but it's not. How do you deal with that issue?
Sure. But you can't guarantee that any software, whether it be proprietary or open, is completely malicious-free. It's a matter of managing risk. So with the open source ethos, the idea is that there's constant revision, more eyeballs on it. In addition to one of the things that when I was working this process, socializing it through the agency, getting approval for it, I spent a lot of times about myths. about these random people will show up and do this. Well, it's not really random. You have to be a developer. You have to be able to speak that language. A lot of the people that show up are former employees or people that run in these similar circles. Sometimes you see somebody that catches you by surprise, but it's a pretty tightly controlled group. In addition to that, everything works on a trusted repository model. No one can just randomly inject anything. They have to make a suggestion, and then it's approved. So you have total control over what is brought in. And if you get somebody with a weird handle, which in GitHub, most people stick with their real names because they want credit for the work. In addition to, GitHub has a hiring button on it. I'm for hire. And you look at some of the developers in the private sector, they want you to send your GitHub profile so they can take a look at what you've done. So yes, are there some goofy handles, you know, Dragon Slayer 66 and some other? Yeah, you do see those. But if you don't like what Dragon Slayer 66 has to contribute, you do not have to accept it. So the system itself does a good job. And then we have internal procedures as well to scan code and do two-team reviews and things like that. And then, of course, there's the HP Fortify, which is a huge testing kind of environment looking for vulnerabilities in the software assurance process. So in addition to the open, transparent nature of GitHub, the trusted model that it works on, there's also substantial effort and software and manpower devoted towards software assurance.
If I'm a CIO or someone in a technology shop across government who's listening to this and thinking, okay, wow, this seems like something we could use as well, what kind of advice do you have for them? There's some challenges you talked about that you guys seem to be able to overcome, but from advice and challenges, what should people kind of keep in mind if they want to go down a similar path?
Yeah, the deconflicting the myths. As this is routing through the organization and something like this will be very high profile for, if it, say, other federal agencies, that you need to get a lot of sign-offs for this to happen. You need to arm yourself with as many facts as possible of how these communities actually work. So there's some great resources that are out there. The Department of Defense CIO, if you go to their page, they'll have an entire section on open source software within the Department of Defense. It's a very, very detailed legal piece that'll walk you through quite a few things there. And then just, you know, searching around about how these communities work and what they do and what they don't do. To arm yourself with as many facts as you can, because like I was saying, the biggest challenge was, oh, I heard a bunch of random people. And people kind of say, well, I heard about Wikipedia. We're not talking about Wikipedia. We're talking about a software version control system. So just kind of things that are on the internet kind of get mushed together in people's minds. And they'll go, well, I heard somebody came in and changed this sentence. We're not talking about sentences. We're talking about code. Snarky comments on blogs, that's completely something else. This is a highly professionalized group of folks that usually do this as their day job full time, that are coming together in this system to make better software. So you got to kind of keep kind of the internet Wild West assumptions at bay, because even though that is on the internet and it is open, it's very, very controlled and tamed compared to some of the analogies that people will reach for about things that are on the internet. So you can't let those kind of negative discussions about what if scenarios endlessly block the progress of the conversation.
What kind of reaction are you getting from either other people within the intelligence community or other agencies outside of the intelligence community? Is there a lot of interest in this? I mean, because you've spoke at different events, so you've been exposed to both civilian and DOD and intel workers who may say, oh, that's a great idea. What kind of reaction are you getting?
Pretty strong, even not just within the government circles. Even some big companies have reached out and said, hey, this is pretty cool. But a specific one, a government-to-government one, is USGS. They reached out. I had a teleconference with them. We sent them our forms on the sign-off procedures to document the intellectual property, to make suggestions for licenses and kind of the language to craft in the README files. So we shared that with USGS, and USGS should be coming up with their GitHub account and starting to put things out there as well. So it's been fantastic, you know, with the people reading the links that are out there in social media, and that's how I was contacted. We had our public affairs folks had a couple articles out in Google+. One of the gentlemen at USGS saw it and just reached out to me on Google+ and said, hey, would you want to chat about this? And we did, and we shared our documentation, our lessons learned, and that's pretty cool. You know, it's important to grow just your agency, but there's similar missions and, you know, the cliches, we're all in it together type of thing. And it was kind of cool to see a non-DOD element reach out and, you know, to benefit from this as well.
And then looking forward, is this also having some unintended effects or positive benefits that you're seeing? For instance, the ability to put this out to a wider audience?
Yeah, this is cool. So I was talking about the checkout process to get things out to the public, and this is source code, but a couple of our mobile app developers reached out and said, hey, do you think that if we can use the security process to check things out, we want to get our apps into the Apple Store and Google Play, rather than, the, like I was saying, the government app stores, which are they're never going to go away. But once again, go where the biggest crowd is. Go with the largest number of eyeballs. So with next week, or if there's the Apple has their governance process when you're checking apps in, it takes a while for to navigate through the system. Same with Google has their process. But because of this, I think that we're going to be able to do another first here in the next week or two, is to become the first intelligence organization to have apps hosted in Apple Store and Google Play. And because of this GitHub process to check software out and have that conversation with security and get those sign-offs, we were able to do this. So what you'll see in the Apple Store or Google Play shortly as an anti-piracy app, the source code for this is available on GitHub. Go take a look at it. It's called Anti-Piracy for Android, Anti-Piracy for Apple. But we're going to put the object or the app into these huge, huge public storage, which is pretty cool. So you'll be able to check those out pretty soon. So just the getting more comfortable with these types of things. There's some growing pains, obviously, with the culture of the intelligence community, but getting more comfortable with putting out source code into GitHub when we do have apps, not always to default to our esoteric government stores with very small ties, is go where the big crowds are. If you want to get Captain Phillips, for example, to use our anti-piracy app, Captain Phillips probably has an iPhone and isn't going to go to a government URL. What he's going to do is search for that within the Apple Store or Google Play and then bring it down to his phone. So it's just to go where the biggest crowds are.
Sounds like we could talk much longer, but unfortunately we're out of time. Chris, we're going to say thank you very much for your time. Chris Rasmussen is the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency's Public Software Development Lead. Chris, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. WFED Washington, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. We are federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.